My friends have a thing. They call it huckling it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Theo.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
And as you can tell, we have a guest who's not physically between the two of us.
Yes. It's a weird cosmic thing.
Yeah. We're expanding our technologies here, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. But on the line, although I should have asked before this, but are we doing picture-in-picture on this one?
Maybe.
Okay.
Depends on how it turns out.
Let's assume then Theo's gonna go here or here. No, Theo's gonna go above my face.
Over my nipples? No.
I just want to know where I want to point. But anyways, somewhere between here and here and here and here, we have Theo on the line all the way from the Shire.
Yeah. Also, I literally can't see where you're pointing, so I have no idea where
yeah,
I'm going.
Yeah, also, no, neither can any one of our listeners.
Anyone
I understand that trolling our listeners is our favorite hobby, but yes, Theo is joining us from Scotland.
Yeah. Super special. 3,000 miles away.
It is quite far. Thank you very much for joining us. Yeah. And today's topic is social justice warriors.
Bum, bum, bum!
That was super dramatic. Well done.
Yes. So, but first, you know, we should define them, and then we'll get into our icebreaker.
Okay.
So what is a social justice warrior? Theo, are you a social justice warrior?
I have been told I'm a social justice warrior. I've also been told I'm a social justice ranger, so I'm not quite sure what my class is at the moment.
You can multi-class.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, I've definitely been called a social justice warrior. I don't know if it was ever meant as a compliment, but hey-o.
It doesn't seem that way.
No, it doesn't seem... It seems people sort of throw a label at people as, like, you have an opinion I don't agree with, and my shouting at you is not making you suddenly agree with me, so I'm going to call you this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of a pejorative term deployed by reactionaries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for people who want to exclude reactionaries from spaces or who are deeply concerned with issues of social justice, which means issues of things like privilege, queer and trans rights, you know, issues facing people of color.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of things that seems to unpack into. And people have started sort of taking ownership of it and reclaiming it.
I'm finding in some of the YouTube videos I watch, it is being conflated, not quite often used synonymously, but under the umbrella of this idea of a regressive left, and then the social justice warrior is somehow a subset of that category of people.
Neat.
I'm finding that a lot of... because I do watch videos, and this is probably going to make people hate me, I watch videos from, like, Sarkhan of Akkad, less so The Amazing Atheist, Thunderfoot. I do watch them, and they do make heavy reference to the idea of a regressive left. They don't necessarily say one is identical with the other, but they tend to throw around terms like the regressive left and the social justice camp. So it seems like you have a global term of the regressive left, and then you have a micro term of the social justice, but I don't know what else is caught in that umbrella, which is why I only have the sense that, like, one is a subset of the other, but I don't know what else is included in the overall umbrella term.
Well, and those guys actually sort of pushed part of my shift in the movement. I used to watch their videos too, and then they sort of joyfully came out of the closet a few years ago as misogynists, and I was like, okay, maybe we're done now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then there's also this equation of social justice warriors with sort of slacktivists, which is a weird, I think, false equivalence. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, Theo?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's social justice warrior seems to be a term that's for people who dare to speak out. I find, like, the slacktivist is kind of people who just sort of retweet the things and the petitions and whatever, and it's sort of like, it's an easy way of showing you care, and then. People who... Oh, God, the house phone's gone off, sorry. People who then actually speak out, that's when they come for you, and you're like, yeah, you! Throw shit your way, which is great fun.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's...
No, we swear on our podcast. It's perfectly fine. And that's not to say... Well, yeah, I guess that's true. That's part of your common vernacular.
But, yeah, slacktivism, you know, it's petitions and stuff. And social justice warriors, it's fighting with people on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is sort of what I've also had the term apply to me, are known for.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've sort of dug out some of that meaning, at least. We can actually do a real icebreaker. Mm-hmm. What is one social justice resource that you would recommend? Theo, as the guest, you may go first.
Oh, good. The one I kind of go to, one I've learned a lot from in the last sort of year, especially last year or so, there's a woman who lives, is a British woman called Zoe Stavery, who writes under the name Stabbers quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And like her whole thing is one angry woman, another angry woman, sorry, she calls herself. And she tackles like all sorts of topics, like from the politics to like issues around like sort of sexuality, gender, or women's issues, all sorts of stuff. But the way she writes, I find, is really... It's easy to get into and it's easy to understand. She doesn't talk down to people at the same time. Which I think, it, sometimes people feel like, oh, I know a lot about this, so I'm going to talk down to people, and it's kind of difficult to read, whereas her stuff isn't as much. So she's like, her stuff pops up on Twitter, I'm always like, ah, things to read. But yeah, I really enjoy her writing.
Haka, how about you?
I typically don't have a lot in my feed. My exposure to it tends to come from links that my friends post on social media. So the one that I tend to find most enlightening, because it comes at it from, you know, the approach that, you know, a very teaching-based approach. At least that's the way I find that their tone tends to take, is it's Everyday Feminism, if I'm not mistaken, right? So they have a wonderful group of contributors and editors, and their tone and the way they construct their individual articles are very consistent. And so I find it's very eye-opening, I guess, is the best way to say it. You know, as a 6'4" white guy, my experience of the world is very limited, very, very limited, and so it helps to paint a picture of what life is like for other people, and to give me the consequences is the wrong word, but the context of what living as somebody else and their experiences in a way that is like, wow, I really understand what you're saying, and it helps. It doesn't put me in another person's shoes per se, but it definitely at least gives me a glimpse into the life of somebody else. So I find that would be the one that I will recommend to put into the show notes.
Nice.
They're really good for sort of inclusive language as well, like the way the actual language they use to talk about the things. Like I think I like about theirs is like every time you see like a post, there's usually like an image, and there's always a description of the image underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always like there's a person in the foreground with this. It's never like a man or a woman, or it's never assuming things about people. And I quite like that. So that tone of inclusivity makes it's really approachable, and it's kind of, it sort of says to people, by the way, remember, don't just assume things just because we tell you. I quite like it for that.
And inclusivity is a big part of it too. Like the people who get labeled as SJWs are more often than not people who are pushing for inclusivity in spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that is the number one thing where that comes up. For me, I have two answers. Hawk usually has two answers, but today I have two.
See, I had like six answers, but I took it down to one because I didn't get told off otherwise.
Well, that's okay. We'll put all six in the show notes.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But no, if I had to recommend one, it would be Robot Hugs, which is a comic, and it focuses a lot on issues of gender and sexuality, but it does so in a really interesting and insightful way. I mean, for something that is essentially a stick figure comic, it is great. The second one is Derailing for Dummies. Derailing for Dummies, I read it years ago, and I still go back and read it. because as a shitheaded fourth-year philosophy student, somebody linked me to it, and I was like, bro, this is... Oh, fuck, I do all these things. Oh, there's the argument I made yesterday. Oh, that was the last paper I wrote in that feminism class. And it's one of those things where I link it to people sometimes when they're into it, but a lot of the time people are just like, well... These are, but they're, it just indexes derailing topics as they apply to issues of social justice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the standard, well, other people are oppressed elsewhere. Mm. Well, sure, but that doesn't mean that people aren't oppressed here.
Mm.
You know, there are lots of different and varying oppressions and experiences. Welcome to the world of intersectionality.
Mm-hmm.
Intersectionality podcast is a whole other podcast, FYI. Okay, we're bracketing a ton of stuff in here.
I want to do the intersectionality podcast.
Maybe we can do that when we're in Scotland.
Yeah, we can do that. I'm down.
Sweet.
Reread some Anne Gary and... But, so, the thing that seems to the, like, sort of core to social justice warriors, it's not a movement. Like I said, we said earlier, it's a pejorative label that gets applied.
Hmm.
Is it's internet focused? Almost nowhere in real life will you see like someone use that term, even when talking with activists or like people who are working for social justice offline.
Yeah, it's like you say to someone in real life and just look at you like, where did you come from? What are you on about?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're doing a thing here, so... It does, I think, in real life. Like, the recent one I can think of was, I was at that protest in Edinburgh, and there was someone in the street who was, like, shouting, oh, you're just a bunch of SJWs. And we were like, we have a megaphone. We can stand here and tell you while you're wrong, but we're currently marching and making attention for this specific topic that's really important, and we have a news camera, so we're going to focus on that, because you're a bit of an asshat. And it was really funny, because this guy was determined, this bunch of women, and like, it was a couple of guys there, but this bunch of women who were protesting about rape culture, he was determined that we were going to get his attention, because he kept shouting stuff at us. And the more we annoyed him, the more annoyed he got. Like, he was just like, you're not listening to me! We're like, yeah, great. Bye. Thanks.
That is true. We are not listening.
Yeah, no, when people would call you, and like, I sometimes use it like to describe myself when I'm talking to people, and they'll look at me like, what are you on about? I'm like, I think because I spend, like we were saying, I do spend a lot of time online, and I have friends who don't, and they'll keep me like, you're a very strange person. Where did you come from?
Yeah, like it's particular to certain internet scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like it comes up a lot in comment sections, it comes up a lot in social or in social media areas. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It is entirely an internet-based pejorative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually delivered by eggs on Twitter.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, I think Twitter like is a big thing in it, because it's really quick. You can just say, you can just fire out things on Twitter. It's really, really quick to send messages to people.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and again, you can hide behind an egg, so you can be a shithead and no one can see who you actually are.
Side bracket, I'm starting to see why podcasts and shows and stuff are really helpful when you're individually sitting at your own computers and you can see the other person trying to speak. It's so much easier when you can see the other person. And I look across at the computer and wave. You can't see me waving, but I'm waving at your video.
Next time we'll run it off the laptop and we'll put it right in front of us.
Maybe, yeah. We always learn and adapt. My contribution to that is, and I also see it, I don't spend a lot of time on Tumblr, but a lot of stuff from Tumblr gets ported onto other platforms, and yep. So you see that as well. So yeah, it's Twitter and Tumblr, and probably other platforms that I personally don't use. Which is funny, because in the pre-show, when we were talking about it, it became very clear that I stand apart from Jim and Ted, because I'm not a Luddite. But I'm definitely not an internet person, so to speak. I don't spend a lot of time on online spaces. And so when you commented that even like, if you were to call an activist an SJW, even they would balk at it. Like, I'm ex-activist, but, like, or you're a protester, but unless you're an online SJW, it's very rare to see that offline, unless it's used in a pejorative sense, or unless somebody is proclaiming it as a self-identifying title.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said in a pre-show, my excuse for being online is, apart from a small group, most of my friends are at least 300 miles away. Mm. So I'm online all the time to catch up with people.
Yeah, no, I spend all my time online, basically. Mm. Managing internet communities is part of my job. Mm. But the interesting thing I think about social justice warrior is how apt it is. The warrior bit, which is, you know, we are internet warriors. They will fight with people on the internet. That is, like, even if you don't, you'll often see people involved in other forms of activism or social justice endeavors. So Zoe Quinn, for instance, is involved, and she founded Crash Override, which is an anti-harassment network. And there's all kinds of individual initiatives or collective initiatives that people are running. But it's usually in a reaction to the mammoth amount of harassment that goes on the internet. But it is people who will fight with you if you are being racist or oppressive or, you know, misogynist in online spaces. They're the and they're described this way, I imagine, by their opponents as the people who will come out of the woodwork specifically to fight with that.
Mm-hmm. I find as well, though, it does work the opposite way around. Like, you can post something that maybe has a social justice lent to it, like you're retweeting mm-hmm. an article that has about a specific topic or whatever, a specific issue, and people who are actively against that will always come out and start yelling at you. Be like, yep. Why the hell are you posting this thing? I'm like, cause it's my Twitter space and I can post what I want. Get out.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
You know. I think I my experience has been a lot more like, I don't pick fights with people. I don't have the energy to pick fights with people. But people like picking fights with me, it turns out. I just have a face for it, apparently.
I do pick fights with people, but I have a lot of energy for that,
mm-hmm.
and more time than I probably should. But one of the things that always comes up, and you brought this up in the pre-show, Huck, is that these discussions are almost universally unproductive with respect to changing people's minds.
Yeah, and again, we discovered, or through discovery, I suppose, this seems bound up or is part and parcel of my general attitude of prioritizing offline space,
yeah,
offline
sure.
space, offline activity. And so I'll give that as an example. Last year, a little over a year ago, I got involved in a basically 24 to 30 hour long Facebook comment argument with a guy who had some very particular attitudes towards how to deal with terrorists.
That was in air quotes, by the way.
Sorry, yeah, for our listeners, terrorists within quotes. I guess with Theo on the line, it makes it abundantly clear that I cannot prioritize my physical actions as conveying meaning. So he had very particular attitudes towards, quote, terrorists, that, close quote, that I would probably characterize more as racism towards cultures stemming from the Middle East, we'll just say charitably. And in the end, I shut down the conversation by, I suppose, superficially insulting his intelligence, but I basically said, okay, well, if you could point to a place on a map where we're supposed to drop these bombs, let me know, but I'm willing to bet you couldn't even do that. And he got really incensed by that, and that basically ended the conversation. And rather than gloat or, you know, egg him on further, I decided to just hold off on it. And at the end of it all, I just felt like that 24 hours that I let myself get sucked into replying or just, you know, saying, I'm sorry, I'm checking out of this discussion kind of deal. I felt that it was a useless, unproductive use of my time, because I knew that no matter what kind of reasoning or evidence that I threw his way, and I did link towards evidence, and I did try to use data that I could source if he were to challenge me on that level. I spent a lot of time invested in this, and there's nothing I was going to be able to say online that was going to change his mind or change his attitudes. And sometimes when I'm sitting as a spectator in an online space, you know, whether it's people who capture segments of chat boxes, comment sections, Tumblr blogs, or whatever, it sometimes feels echo chambery. You know, like it resonates really well with the people that already buy into that attitude, and it will not convince anybody outside of that attitude. And so sometimes it feels like by me participating in it, and then by extension, other people investing time and energy and emotion and whatnot into it, you're doing it, and it's not gonna accomplish anything. You know, it's not going to change racist attitudes. It's not going to change sexist attitudes. Women are still going to be not safe in certain spaces. Mm-hmm. Minorities, racial minorities, are not going to be safe in certain spaces. And so that's where I come from, because I tend to prioritize that offline experience rather than online experience. And now I turn it over to my esteemed co-hosts, who are going to tell me not necessarily why I'm wrong, but why I'm missing a certain key point to this. Take it away.
I would say in that case, yeah, okay, you maybe not changed that guy's mind, but you then, by saying you won't stand for that, have planted a flag saying, my space on the internet is my space, where these are my attitudes towards the world, and I don't agree with your racist attitudes. So please don't keep them in my space. I mean, it might feel unproductive because you never got to a conclusion of that conversation because the guy went off in a huff. But then people can look back and say, look, you know, Huck said this, and you know, he's not abiding with racist attitudes. There's probably not a point in trying to have this conversation with him. So in a way, you sort of you've made your little space in the internet. Say, look, this is attitudes that will not stand here.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't my space though. it was underneath a post that a friend had made on their page.
Well, even better then, you're sort of standing by, you're sort of saying, you know, you're still saying, like, this is attitudes I will not stand for. So then that person is not really going to come into your space on the internet and make that conversation, because it's like, well, there's no point, Huck won't agree with me, we're just going to have this argument. So it might feel unproductive, but in a way you've kind of said, you're showing your attitudes to the world and that, and you've kind of made this little space that's yours and say, like, no, you don't get to do that in here.
Oh, I do remember one little bit of context why I did carry on for 24 hours. This is around the time that there was... so you might not have heard about it on your side of the pond, Ted, but Jim, you might remember it. This was around this time last year where a Muslim mother had been punched in the face or something by two men in Toronto when she was on her way to go pick up the students. And the reason why... Yeah, okay, so you did hear about it. And so the reason why at the time I remember thinking that I wanted to carry on is, you know, online internet people are harmless, but these people have these thoughts, and these thoughts tend to dictate their actions, and these actions lead to punching people and assaulting people in you know, like mothers going to pick up their child, which is why I kept going on about it, which is why afterwards, when everything was said and done, and I hadn't changed his mind, it almost felt like a failure. Like, I just wasted my time, because this person still holds on to these attitudes and is still going to behave from these first principles, so to speak. So...
I mean, like, I would go further in the sense that it isn't even about planting a flag. It is about reclaiming online spaces from oppressive attitudes and oppressive speech, and like creating spaces that are hostile to that, like flat out hostile, in the same way that your body is hostile to flus.
Creating antibodies.
Yeah, like, let us take for granted that racism should be unwelcome everywhere. Like, that is our starting point. At which point, when we encounter it, we have an obligation to, at the very least, confront it. Bracketing a whole conversation about the fact that takes a lot of energy, and you do have to take care of yourself. But on the whole, the notion is reclaiming spaces. It is that it is showing people that this place does not belong to you. This place is for everyone. And part of what that means is that it needs to be safe for everyone. And the fact that it is apparently not safe on Twitter to be a racist because you might get fired or whatever seems fine.
Yeah, see, that's why I started the blogs I did recently, because I'm like, this is my space to say the things I want to say about the world. And if people come in and try and be hostile about that, I have the right to shut them down because that's my space. And it's like, you know, you can't just come in here and yell horrendous things at me because you think it's okay. Because in the real world, it's not. Like, I don't even know. It's like, there are certain spaces on the internet that are toxic and are going to be toxic, and you're not going to change that. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to keep the people who have that mindset in those spaces and not ruining the rest of the spaces. It's the tricky bit.
Yeah.
One of the things I find, and I thought about this after our pre-show discussion, but before we started filming, is in offline space, it is very easy to exclude people from certain spaces just based on power imbalances.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have power, it's very easy and low cost even to kind of gate off spaces without really much effort. You know, like if a person's not welcome, they leave on their own accord of the time.
Chilling effect.
Yeah, whereas online spaces, short of hacking, it's very easy to gate off a safer space. Like, you know, people have to be members, and then the members can be banned. Like there are ways to get through those kinds of safeguards, but for the most part, it's easier to gate off the space. My worry is that, again, like the offline space, it's very hard to do that unless, like, you already have that space kind of reclaimed as this is a space where we don't tolerate that. You know, it's kind of hard to bring that into the offline space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see that happening even now with, there was a club vote in Britain recently that excluded women.
Oh, Scotland, why do you do these things? Muirfield Golf Club.
That's the one.
Gullen, just outside Edinburgh. It's one of the old golf courses. It's been on the open, like the open tournament, like rota for a long, long, long time. And they had a vote recently because there's a story. I read the story. This woman, she's quite a keen golfer, and her husband's quite a keen golfer. And for her, I can't remember if it was her 60th birthday or somewhere around there, he said, "I'll take you to Muirfield and we'll have a game on the Muirfield course." And then when they went to the club afterwards, she had to sit outside while he went in to get them a drink because she wasn't allowed in. As she was sitting there waiting for her husband to come back, a man with his dog walked in. And the dog was allowed in, but she wasn't. And they had a vote recently to have women, because the Royal and Ancient, which is the golf course in St. Andrews, that's the famous golf course. Mm-hmm. They had this vote about 10, 15 years ago. And they agreed to have a woman. And the woman said, "We'll have a separate clubhouse. We just want to have a club." And it's thriving. Like, there's so many members to it. And the woman at Muirfield said, "We'll do the same thing. We'll wear your uniform. We'll have a separate room in the clubhouse. We just want to be able to be members and have a space." And the members there all voted no.
Of course.
So they basically got told, "That's cool. You can be a really sexist old club. You're no longer on the rota for the Open." And I think they estimated it was something like £200 million it's taken out the local economy for not being on that rota for the Open tournament anymore.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the British pound is valid currency inside the golf club?
Yes.
So women are allowed inside the golf club as long as they're on bills?
Yeah, pretty much. The Queen's allowed in, it's a banknote.
Classy.
Yeah. The problem with that is most of the members of the golf club are in their sort of 60s, 70s. And there's definitely a trend in, I don't know about where you are, but definitely here, there's definitely a trend of every sort of over 50. There's very much institutional sort of sexism, racism and stuff goes on with the generation. And they think that's a large part in it. But they've now, like it's in the local economy, like Gullen and the town nearby. They reckon there's something like £200 million going to be lost to that local economy because the whole circus of the Open tournament and the cameras, I think, is not going to go there anymore.
Yeah.
They've also
so we're getting a little off topic.
Yeah, they all just turn around and told Trump that he's not allowed just to barge his way onto the calendar either. His golf course.
But no, there's a big focus on reclaiming spaces. And you, Huck, you mentioned private spaces and creating private spaces. And that's an argument that comes up a lot online is, well, go and create a forum.
Mm-hmm.
Go and create a blog. Go and create your own private site and talk about whatever you want there.
Mm-hmm.
Happens all the time on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go create your own subreddit where you can do your own thing. We're going to do our own thing here. But there are lots of public spaces online. Twitter is a huge example of that. You can follow anybody you want on Twitter as long as their account isn't locked.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those spaces where you'll often see people fighting hard to reclaim them, to get a foothold.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're public.
Mm-hmm.
And it matters that people don't just exist in private spaces, they exist in public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the same way that things like Take Back the Night rallies are about women reclaiming public spaces and reclaiming their right to be safe in public spaces. That ends the 6-foot-tall white guy's comment on Take Back the Night rallies,
because
that's a topic for a whole other day.
I think we're to give the listener our audience a little bit of context. The reason why we started talking about this is, remember that I tend to prioritize the offline space, and by proxy, as an example of it, you know, like I work at a bar, so like it's a huge open space where I can to a certain degree police that space.
Is literally your job to.
Well, and so like I have on occasion kicked people out for racist comments and whatnot. Or people who are where people complain about the behavior of other people. It is something that I do, and it's something I'm paid to do. And so my kind of old man Huck mentality of it doesn't do anything is like it silences, you know, the dick.
It silences
an asshat on an online space, and they just go away to another space to say their stuff. And much in the same way, like I would rather change their mind, even though, as Jim says, that's not really necessarily the point of having these discussions to change it. But that person is going to log off their computer and then continue to be an ass in real spaces and affect other people. And here's the division of where I prioritize the offline space. Like, for example, I want to train to become a paramedic because I feel that I want to help people. You know, medically for medical emergencies and whatnot. So that is kind of where I tend my focus. And it's not that I don't think the online spaces are not important in that regard. It's just I tend to prioritize it one way. But just because I prioritize it the one way doesn't mean that that's the only way to go or that the other way is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes I forget about that, and other people who fall in a similar line to me tend to go that way of because I don't find value in it, it therefore doesn't have value, as opposed to no, it doesn't. You don't have value in it, but that doesn't mean it's not incredibly important to somebody else or incredibly useful to somebody else.
I would ask you then, right, if, say, when you're working at the bar and you turn someone away because they're being abusive to someone else in the line or whatever, where do they go at that point?
Probably just to another bar.
Right. So are you saying, like, you're saying when you silence someone on Twitter, they just go away somewhere else and harass someone else?
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, like, what I do on Twitter when I, like, if I confront people or, you know, like, I have these, like, fights with people, I can ban those people from my space, so you can't come into my space. But then people who are following me will see that this person has done this thing and can block them as well. So in a way, it's almost like I'm acting as a bouncer for those people because I'm stopping this person or them coming into contact with this harmful stuff that this person's saying. Because I mean, I don't always feel safe doing that. I don't always feel I'm able to do that. And other people do it for me when I'm in that situation. But I know people who sometimes don't feel safe confronting these people, and I can, because I can say to them, look, you know, what you're doing, you're harassing someone, you're being really abusive, you need to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And if that person gets worse, and we all know, just, you know, block them, silence them, do not give them a platform, move them away.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like a bit like the same sort of idea as what you're saying, like you can physically move someone on. It's just like on the online space, we're kind of moving someone on. It may be, like you said, you're not necessarily going to change their mind space, you know, might go and be abusive somewhere else, but the fact that they've been abusive and they've had this fight online has kind of red flagged this person to other people who see it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you're hitting on the point too that that behavior hasn't gone unchallenged.
Mm-hmm.
Like the issue in a lot of spaces, I mean, you find this all the time in old boys clubs, for example, is people are allowed to behave however they want. You can be a misogynist and no one else will challenge it.
Yeah.
And that behavior should be challenged. That is not okay. And challenging it is one of the things that helps create more space and make spaces safer,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that, no, there are people here who will not tolerate it. And the other thing I think that the social justice warrior sort of pejorative misses out on is the fact that the internet is a real place. It is as real as a bar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is. If you want to argue between physical and digital, sure, but all digital is physical. You are not physically present and walking around, but you are engaging with people in the same kinds of ways. You can flirt, you can fight, you can fall in love, you can do all kinds of stuff on the internet.
And pretty soon it's going to be cheaper to do that visually with Oculus Rift and any other virtual reality technologies.
Sure.
Where you are now able to, in some sense, navigate a space by proxy physically.
Yeah.
I mean, like, think about the internet. I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you guys. I wouldn't know you guys.
Yeah.
Mm.
Theo and I met on Twitter, I want to say, like, 4 years ago.
Well, Facebook popped up.
Yeah,
Facebook popped up in January and said we've been Facebook friends for 4 years, so it was maybe slightly more than that.
Yeah, about that. Then yeah, a little more. But you know, these spaces are real. The connections that are created there are genuine. We talked about that in our social media episode.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion that the actions on the internet don't count is a notion that entirely aids harassers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a notion that actual law enforcement is now contending with, is that what do you do when you have people who are being harassed internationally? How do you deal with that? Or worse, with things like swatting.
Mm-hmm.
But swatting, at least there's an identifiable crime that happens.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are not aware of what swatting is, really quickly, it's...
Link in the show notes, too.
Yeah, it's usually where... somebody online calls in a fake threat of some kind that would mobilize basically a SWAT team or some sort of specialized police force to break down or break into a place. And it's often done to gamers or usually happens to streamers where they're streaming, say on Twitch or something like that, and somebody will call police on them and threaten or say that they're threatening with some sort of clear and present danger, weapons, bomb, or whatever, mm-hmm. and then a SWAT team will show up to investigate, which is horrible to think that would happen.
It's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, the whole thought of it is completely terrifying.
Or doxing is another example.
Yeah.
Which is just exposing people's personal information online and allowing all kinds of people access to it. Like, again, I will take it as given that online harassment is a real thing. I mean, there are tons of documented examples. You can go on. There's a laundry list.
If I may score a point from my side, though, doxing and swatting are dangerous because they affect you in the offline space more
yes.
than anything else.
Yes.
Like, it is dangerous to dox because then somebody can physically find you. It is dangerous to swat because somebody is affecting you in the offline space.
Mm-hmm.
And that
That's why all my details are, like, mm-hmm. behind as many walls as I can put them behind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm taking no chance of that because I know
mm-hmm.
the sort of people who target people like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't particularly want... I mean, to be fair, if the police and Cooper turn up at my door, they probably... My parents wouldn't blink an eyelid because me and Becky used to kind of grass on people quite a lot. But, you know, like, if the police were at my door, I'd be like, what? You know, it would be rather terrifying. I don't particularly want to have to deal
yeah.
with that.
No, but these are consequences that happen in offline space. But they're
meat space.
Yeah.
I like the term meat space.
It isn't a term that I often use in mixed company, but yes.
Yeah.
Ew. made full of meat. Ew.
They're made of meat. They think.
Yeah, I know.
Thinking meat.
For meat bags.
The result is a sort of, I don't know, I don't want to say that there's a need for social justice warriors. I think that confers too much onto what is essentially a pejorative.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a need for people to confront that behavior always, in all spaces. And mm-hmm. this is a form that it has taken online.
Yeah. Again, like different people are going to feel different levels of ability of how much they can speak out against that, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, I happen to be, in the local parlance, I'm a gobshite.
A what?
Excuse me?
A gobshite. It is someone who just talks her mouth off, and I have talked myself into trouble before. But I'm like, I am willing to stand up for people who are a bit scared to do it. Like, I had a thing at school, like, my friends would come to me, like, look, this idiot's chasing us, going, like, pal about me at lunchtime, so if they do come over, you can tell them to fuck off. Because that's kind of what I did. And
you have blogs devoted to that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Where are your blogs?
It's not everyone's going to feel the need to stand up, and it is the people who feel they can speak out that usually do attract these idiots who decide that SJW is a horrible label to throw at people.
Mm-hmm.
Gobshite, I like that. That actually falls in line with something a lesson that I kind of learned from my dad, where he would often say, because he grew up lower socioeconomic status. And I guess he got picked on a lot when he was a kid. And I asked him about it one time. And he kind of just shrugged his shoulders and he said, well, if they're picking on me, that means they're leaving somebody else alone.
Right.
Yeah. I was struck by that. Like, wow, that's something. Like, I really looked up to my dad one of the reasons. That was definitely like, wow, my dad. Like, and he would pick fights with people to protect the little guy kind of deal. Like, when they were being picked on, he would step into a fight to, like, protect his younger brother. I mean, it's a brother, but by proxy, other people like that. So.
Yeah. No, I've definitely done that. I've definitely stepped in when I've seen, like, a friend being harassed online and they're not quite sure how to deal with it. I'll step in and try and take the heat off of them, because I'm like, if I can deal with it, I will. There are times I can't. There are times I'm having really bad days and then people have pick on me and I'm just like, whoa, I can't deal with this today.
Mm.
But if I can, I will usually step up.
Mm.
So, Huck, if people want to fight with you on the internet, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at RJ Huckle. You can find me on Instagram, R Huckle.
Yep.
I think it is. Facebook, I think I have it set up, so it's harder to find me if you're...
No, Facebook's private.
Yeah.
Tumblr.
What?
Yeah, your Tumblr.
Oh, I do have a Tumblr, don't I? I posted just for the doodles.
You're awful.
I don't really spend a lot of time scoping out Tumblr, and all the people that I follow on Tumblr are all like artists and stuff. So I have no idea.
You can find him on Tumblr, also in the show notes.
And I do have a little bit of a website blog started. We can link to that down below. That's about my journey into medicine. So that's, I think it's ryanhuckle.wordpress.com, but we'll link it down below.
All right, and Theo, I know you've been trying to dodge from one of your blogs, but I'm going to make you do it.
Which one?
Yes.
Which one do you want?
Oh, you're such a jerk. I have two.
We'll put all Theo's blogs in the show notes.
Yeah, I have two. I have this Theo's Clubhouse, which is more sort of just broad social justice topics. And then there's another one which name, I am so amused by this name still. I came up with the name in the shower. I have one about sort of trans life and more trans issues. It's called You Shall Not Pass. It's something I will never do, and I'm quite proud I will never do. But yeah, that's my blogs.
And as always, if you want to fight with me, I'm you don't have to if you don't want to.
My Twitter is Captain Wordbeard.
Nice. And as always, if you want to fight with me, go ahead.
Nice. I came up with that in an attempt to impress a girl.
Did it work?
My Twitter handle.
Did it work?
Yeah, it worked.
Excellent.
Victory.
If you want to fight with me, I am Concept Crucible on Twitter. And you can find me at jimtickwell.com.
Or in the comment section down below.
Or, yeah, we have two perfectly good comment sections.
Yeah.
feel free to do whatever you want there and expect that if you do things that are inappropriate that we will confront you.
Mm-hmm.
Or call you out in a video. Anyway, I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Theo.
We're signing off.
Stay awesome.
All right, let's get this show on the road for real.
Yeah, go.
Here's how it's going to work. I assume that you know how it's going to work, actually, because you've heard at least one podcast.
I heard several of your podcasts.
There you go. Then you know how it works. You're way better off than literally every other guest we've had.